Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's good to see some familiar faces and some new ones. Thank you very much, as ever, for your interest. Giles and I are very pleased to have the opportunity to share with you our half-year results. And I guess the headline is that overall, we're very happy with where we are. It's been a good start to the year, particularly in our three largest trading regions in the US, the UK and Europe, which have all seen healthy profits growth. The outcome in Australia is behind where it was last year, but very much as signalled at the full year and in line with our expectations. It's been a very busy time for us. 15 months ago, we acquired a business in the United States, as some of you will recall, called Impact Innovations, and we'll touch base later on how that integration has gone. But we're very happy with how the year's gone. Hasn't been without its challenges, and we can dig into those later on. As ever, there are always challenges to deal with, some tougher than others. And I guess the message will be that our result is particularly pleasing against the backdrop of those challenges. And as I say, we'll explain those later on. Our business, which is very much a celebrations products business, is seeing interesting growth in the non-celebrations category. Whilst at the half year, there's been growth year on year in each area, there's notable growth in categories such as stationery and creative play. Yes, from a relatively low base, but these are everyday higher margin categories, and we feel very positive about those for the future as we look to alter the balance of our business. And on that matter, on slide four, what you can see, partly as a result of our acquisition of Impact last year, the United States is now 61% of our business, and the UK now only 19% of our business. Of note there is that our share of products, which is specifically for Christmas, has gone up to 60%. That is no surprise to us, because that's very much as a result of our acquisition of Impact. Going forward over the next few years, we absolutely expect that the Christmas share will actually come back down to possibly less than 50%. The Christmas business will grow in value, but will reduce in its percentage of our overall mix. But that takes time. It will happen over the next few years. Similarly, in the first half, you'll see that manufacturing as a percentage of our activities related to sales has gone down. But in the second half, it will increase again. That's just a question of how the sales mix plays out. So that kind of sets the scene. And Giles will now explain our financials. And I'll come back later to talk about a number of value-creating opportunities for the future. Thank you.
So I'll just give you a quick run through the headlines, and then we'll dig into the numbers a little bit more on the following pages. So revenues were up 21%. That drove a 14% increase in adjusted profit. EPS, 2% up, and I'll explain that in a second, with a 20% increase in dividend at the interims. So let's just go back to that EPS number. Why only 2% when you're getting a 14% increase in revenues? To the answer to that, you have to go back 12 months and look at the Impact acquisition. And when we did the Impact acquisition, we got 1 month's worth of trading results as a result of in the last half year. That 1 month was the peak month for the business, and as such, basically flattered last year's half-year results. You had a big proportion of the first half profits in that 1 month, but you only had 1 month's worth of a weighted average share adjustment.
so for the shares that we raised for the acquisition. So your EPS was flattered as a result last year, and therefore, when you look at it this year, the comp looks quite challenging. So really, we need to look forward to the year end, where we'll get a much more representative view of the EPS growth alongside the profit growth. If we flick the page, we get into the detailed P&L. Some things to pull out on that. If we look at that revenue growth, the revenue growth is coming from both organic growth, and I'll talk more about that on the next page. It's coming from organic growth and the full year effect of the Impact acquisition. It's fair to say the Impact acquisition is the bigger proportion of that growth. At an operating profit level, we also saw 21% growth. And if we then step back and say, what was behind that when we strip out movements in FX? Actually, FX wasn't a big impact in the half year. On a constant currency basis, our growth would have still been 18% of revenues and 18% of operating profit. Jumping into the finance costs, this is where you'll get introduced to IFRS 16 for the first time in our numbers. I know you're looking forward to it. So finance costs were up. The significant driver of that was IFRS 16. We have a slide later on that to go through. But also we had higher average debt as a result of the acquisition that we did in the year before. In the first half, we saw some exceptionals, really primarily driven by the ongoing costs associated with the integration and the U.S. restructuring following the acquisition of Impact. Just to get into some more detailed financials, acquisition amortization was also up year-on-year. Again, full year effect of the acquisition, but also because of the speed of the transition and the integration that we've done in the U.S., the trade names that we had to identify as part of the acquisition accounting, we've had to accelerate the write-off of those trade names. It's all non-cash. It's all part of the allocation of the purchase price in relation to the Impact acquisition.
Would you expect more exceptional items in the second half?
We would expect an ongoing level of exceptionals in the second half. Finally, on the tax level, effective tax rate about 22.5% at the half year, and really representative of the blended mix of profits from the different regions, plus some being able to recognize some previously unrecognized losses. So let's flip the page and get into the territories and understand what's going on within the territories. So we saw good operating profit growth in the U.K., in the U.S., and also in Europe. So if we dig into the U.S. first, into the Americas, as we call it, as I mentioned earlier, we're getting a lot of revenue growth there from the full year effect of the acquisition of Impact. But beneath that, there's also organic growth. And we're seeing organic growth of about 4% in the Americas. It's difficult to be exact because of the integration of the two businesses. We are seeing some crossover of revenue lines between Impact and DG Americas, the legacy business. So, but we know that there's about 4% when we step back from it. Worth looking and explaining the margin dynamics within the U.S. as well. You'll see that the operating margin stepped back from 10.6% to 9.6%. Really the same point that I mentioned earlier in relation to last half year, we had the benefit of that peak trading one-month period in September, which helped drive a higher margin. Obviously, we've got a full 6 months of margin in the first half in this financial year. Within the U.S. performance, it's worth remembering, and we will touch on it later, the dynamics of the U.S.-China tariffs. They haven't been insignificant in the year, and Paul and I will touch on that later. We've got a slide later on that. Plus also to remember that we are very much on track in relation to the integration synergies that we identified as part of the acquisition. So we are doing what we said we would do there in bringing those two businesses and getting those operational synergies that we hoped. So let's move on to the U.K. In the U.K., worth
remembering the backdrop and the context to the UK market, it's a tough market in the UK. Lots of activity, lots of transition, you would say, between from high street to non-high street retailing. And we're working well with the winners in that market, but we are having to adjust to that as well. So there are certain retailers that we are not doing business with because we don't want to take the credit exposure anymore, because we're assessing that that risk is too big for us going forward. So with that backdrop, we're actually really pleased with the profit number, which is going forward in the UK. A lot of that being driven by new categories that we're bringing in, such as not for resale bags, but also the fact that we're keeping our costs under control. So let's move away from the UK and into Europe. We're seeing a continuing story in Europe that you've seen over the last couple of years from us. We're working with the winners, a consistent theme you'll hear from us. We're working with the winning retailers, and with those retailers, we're seeing good sales growth, and that sales growth is coming from not only the fact that these retailers are opening stores and therefore we're expanding our revenues through that, but we're also expanding the number of SKUs that we service those stores. So we're seeing good revenue growth. On the back of that, we're also seeing good profit growth, and that profit growth is actually at a higher level than the revenue growth, driven by not only the fact that we're growing in product categories that have a higher margin, but we're also delivering efficiencies from the investments that we've made in prior years in things like the big printing press that we put into the Netherlands last year, which is now delivering the efficiencies this year. Australia, well, as Paul mentioned earlier, Australia stepped back in line with our expectations. Lots of reasons behind that, but really we saw them coming. It's in line with our expectations, and we are now in a position where we're looking at how we can grow that business with new initiatives and new developments. So let's move forward to the cash flow on the next page. Headline number is our net debt is lower than last year at this time, primarily reflecting the fact that our opening position was improved. We had more net cash at the beginning of this year than the prior year, and therefore that's really what's driving that improvement in net debt. Within the actual half year, our cash flow was actually pretty similar. But it's important to point out maybe one area in particular, and one obviously that is close to our hearts. It's the area that we focus on the most, which is working capital. And at first glance, the headline numbers look like they're stepping back. But actually, if we look within the analysis and you look within the grey box on the presentation, you'll see that a lot of that is just a function of the timing of the acquisition of Impact last year. When we bought Impact last year, we bought them pretty close to their peak working capital period. So our opening balance sheet with Impact to the half year was a very small movement in working capital, whereas this year we've had the full half of working capital movement, and therefore that shows. And you can see that in the numbers in the table. So we're very much in line with where we expected to be, and look forward to the second half showing the cash generation that we do get, and we'll show you that in the slide in a minute. IFRS 16 is a thing that we've of beauty. So if we look to the next page, we can see some of the analysis or some of the impact of that on our balance sheet. And you can see IFRS 16 coming in, increasing rights of use assets, but also bringing lease liabilities onto the balance sheet. Overall, the net impact on our balance sheet is roughly a £5 million pound reduction in net assets. And from a profit and loss perspective, our adjusted profit before tax was actually 0.2 million pounds lower as a result of IFRS 16. So if we hadn't had IFRS 16, it wouldn't have had that much of an impact on the profits overall. If we just flip the page, we can get a bit of an insight into where are we in terms of our annual cycle. And what's that doing to leverage overall? So you can see within our annual cycle, our net debts are down, and the graph on the page shows that. But it also shows you really at our peak at the half year, in line with previous years as well. And we're now on the way towards that net cash position at the end of the year. and very much in line with what we're expecting to see, an improved net cash position by the end of the year. If we just look at that, how that impacts on our average leverage, you can see that we delivered a lower average leverage this year versus last year, 1.3 times last year, 1 times this year. And we'll see that's very much where we expect to end the year as well. Two main challenges on the next page that give us a lot of time to think and work and focus on, those being Brexit and, more importantly, probably from our perspective, well, definitely from our perspective, is the US-China tariffs. So Brexit is a consistent story from our business and has been for many years, about three, presumably. And that story is it really doesn't have that much impact on our business in terms of our inter sort of business or trade with Europe and Europe with us. There isn't that much. So, you know, what we make in Europe, we sell in Europe. What we make in the UK, we sell in the UK. And really, there isn't much much trade between the two geographies, if that's the best way to describe it. What we do worry about, and we have therefore planned for, is there going to be an impact on the logistics, operations, distribution of the business as a result of Brexit? So we've done planning. You can see we've listed it there in terms of the presentation. We've done planning to ensure that we're as prepared as we can be in relation to that. Beyond that, we're relatively comfortable with our preparation for any Brexit decisions. More important, and actually a lot more significant to the business in the first half, has been tariffs. And the US-China tariff situation has been one that's been developing very rapidly over the last 9 months, and one that does have an impact on our business. And the impact is not just sort of the financial impact of a tariff going from 10% to 15% to 25%. It's also how many products it applies to, but also it's how have retailers responded to those tariffs and the decisions and their speed of their decision making, which has slowed and has made our business have to do more in a shorter period of time, which has introduced costs to the business as well. So it's been a challenging time. Now, we have mitigated those tariffs as best possible. We've gone back to the suppliers in China. We've renegotiated. We've gone to our product itself and redesigned and re-engineered the product to take cost out. We've talked to our customers and worked with our customers to either put price changes in or whatever to enable us to limit the exposure. Ultimately, though, at the end of it, we have had to take a commercial view with the customers on what are we going to do. And that means that has introduced a cost to us. Now, we've mitigated that to the maximum. But a lot of this cost is an opportunity. And the way we look at it is we can, if we respond well with customers, then we can also look to develop other revenue streams in the future and take advantage of those by taking some pain now. Okay, so moving on from challenges and Brexit to our future targets. So we still maintain our three shareholder commitments. We're focused on double-digit EPS growth, we're focused on reducing leverage, and we're focused on a progressive dividend policy that takes us to a dividend cover of approximately 2.5 times. In getting there, we're anticipating seeing growth in revenues of between 3 to 5% on an organic basis. That will depend on regions and so on.
Why is it reduced so much? I mean, I'm not arguing with you that that's not a very sensible target. I'm just curious as to if last year was 9.8, what are the factors you've taken into account to reduce yours to now 3 to 5?
I think there's an element of, obviously, we're not going to necessarily go out with the number that we hope to, you know, we'll build some caution into our forecasts. Equally, we could see that there were some bits of business that in previous years were, you know, we gained some business. We can't go and gain that same business over and over again. So that has an impact. I think they're the main two reasons, really. It's just a realistic view of where we think we can take the revenues organically as we stand today. In terms of EBITDA, though, we do see the opportunity to grow EBITDA at a
closer to 10%. And that's because we're looking to grow our revenues into higher gross margin categories. And we're also going to be seeing the efficiencies coming through from both synergies, but also from the investments that we've made in the past and we plan to make in the future. So it's a mixture of two, but we are still focused on that higher level of EBITDA growth compared to revenue. So we're gaining margin. We do focus on turning that into cash, and that will drive that leverage reduction. And we also still remain focused on maintaining a strong return on capital employed.
So on to slide 15, Giles has highlighted on the slide that he was just talking about, you know, the key strategic drivers. So I'll just dig into those a little deeper. Working with the winners, our top 10 customers are around 40% of our sales. We are growing well with them. And the major retailers that we're dealing with are growing their store base. They're growing their regional activity. And what we're doing is growing the breadth of products that we sell to them. So we are optimistic that we can achieve organic growth. We're often asked about, well, how about e-commerce? I guess this year, e-commerce will be around £30 million, i.e. that's business either with specific e-tailers, people like Amazon or Ocado, but also our brick and mortar retailers are strongly growing their online business. I think the second biggest online business in the world is Walmart.com, for example. But there, as we've explained previously, you have to engineer a product offering that makes sense online. It looks good on a site and it has a value which makes sense. Bulky, cheap products don't tend to work online. So we will bundle products together, you know, everything you need for your Christmas tree or everything you need for your party. That makes sense. In terms of design and innovation, one of the things to highlight, you may recall approximately 50,000 products are created by us every year. 70% of those will not exist next year. We are in the fashion business. The vast majority of what we create is pre-sold, so there's very little speculative element to that. But our customers look to us as being the pipeline of design and innovation. There's a big focus on sustainability. And, you know, I've got an example here. So this is a 100% biodegradable Christmas cracker. Now, we've had this as an option for years. We've been on the front foot in terms of investing in sustainable and more environmentally friendly options. Now, we're very happy that our customers are embracing this. Partly that's because of their consumers. It's a higher profile issue, but we're on the front foot. We're not perfect. We're on a journey, but we're ahead of the game and we'll continue to do so. We're taking this seriously. It's not a nice to have, it's a need to have, and we're in a good place. Efficiency and scale. We've mentioned, obviously, the investment in the United States in our printing press, which we're very excited about. We have a second production line now imminently in place in Wales for our bags, not for resale business. In fact, we're now discussing a third production line. We've got excellent forward visibility to fill our new production line. We're delighted with that. And in Holland, we've introduced whole new levels of automation in how we convert paper product. We're confident that will go well. We'll have a year under our belt of that. And then we will roll that out into probably the United States and the UK as well. So lots of interesting things to go for. Just over the page onto slide 16, just a reminder, we're a very decentralized business. Giles and I, we're based in beautiful Evershot in the UK. Our team is a grand total of 14 people. And we have 2,000 people in the group. Our business is run regionally. And here you can see that our regional NDs and CEOs are either responsible entirely for a region or for a significant product category within that region. And that it's that team who are running our businesses, engaging with our customers and growing the business organically. And very often it's they who will come to us with any acquisition opportunities for us then to work on collectively. So there's strength in depth across the group, and we've got a good team of people, a very experienced team of people. On slide 17, a reminder, why do our customers do business with us? It's a good question that we're often asked because many of our customers have got considerable resource. Price is a given. We have to be competitive, but it's so much more. We've got a very complex and broad base of capability covering all aspects. In terms of customer service, you know, if customers want a single item to a single store, we can do that. If they want container loads to be shipped around the world, we can do that too. We're a very flexible supplier, and we have to keep raising our game. The next slide is something that we haven't had before, and we've been working hard on it. Frankly, there isn't detailed market surveys that we can depend on in terms of how big are the markets that we sell to. We are often the main player in that market. And over the last number of months, we've done an extensive bottom-up question with our customer base. What's the spend in the categories that we can supply that we are not currently seeing coming our way? And of course, we ask the question, why is that the case? We then say, how much of that could be profitable? What can we access, et cetera, et cetera? And what you can see on this slide is our view of the scope of that organic growth market. Where is that opportunity? And you can see different opportunities by product category, by region. A statement of the obvious, but I'll say it. So 3 stars in America won't be the equivalent to 3 stars in Australia. These are very much within the regions. But what does that translate to from a value perspective? Overall, that spend would be approximately at our selling price, approximately $2 billion. With roughly 2/3 of that to 70% being in the United States. So we've got a lot to go for. And there's good growth within our existing categories. I would say that going forward, if you look at towards the bottom of that list, stationery, creative play, arts and crafts, these are the areas which we see some very interesting opportunities in. Why? They're multi-skewed, they're complex, they're difficult, they require a lot of design know-how, and retailers are generally supplied by a very fragmented supply base. So if we think of the strategy that our major retailers have, which is largely consolidating their supply base, as I've said, we like to work with the winners. They like to work with the winners, and that's how we'll grow. A lot of the markets are flat. As it happens, the markets in art and craft products are growing. So we're pretty excited about those areas. So I thought it'd be interesting to share that with you.
So those are the areas that you'll be looking to expand through acquisition, do I take it?
Well, organically, actually, you've led on to, thank you for doing that, because the next page is about acquisitions. So what it's done, it helps shapes an acquisition strategy. So we try to explain if we do consider acquisitions, and we've had plenty of opportunities on an ongoing basis, but particularly since we acquired Impact, we've been really deluged by opportunities. It's a statement that we haven't bought a company since we acquired Impact, because those opportunities have got to tick a lot of boxes and most don't. So we like to see businesses that if we acquired, it would make sense to our customers. It helps their consolidation strategy. We like products that we can get our heads around. They're in related and adjacent categories. You know, would we buy an electronics business? Probably not. Would we buy a luggage business? Probably not. Would we buy a backpack and school bag business? Yeah, that could make sense to us because it's a related and adjacent product category. By the way, there's no clue in there at the businesses we are looking at. But so it needs to knit with what we do. We do want to see tangible operational synergies. We don't tend to believe the big, you know, J curve that you see of growing turnover in the future. We like the hard stuff, the hard synergies, as we have had with Impact, as we have delivered with Impact. We will say, well, what does that look like compared to the organic alternative? Can we just be more patient and build this over a period of time? We want acquisitions to be earnings enhancing. And critically, actually going back to the team that you saw before, if our team within our businesses embrace and sponsor an acquisition opportunity, then you've got a very good chance that you will deliver on those synergies. And that's a critical part, particularly if you feel that the business you're looking at doesn't have the strength in depth in terms of its own management team. So putting all those together and a compelling value for the business, that's quite rare to find those businesses. So, you know, we're always looking, as we have for many, many years. So if there are some interesting opportunities, we will pursue them. But against the backdrop of that leverage, the average leverage that Giles mentioned, we're very happy to be in a situation of having, you know, prudent levels of average leverage. So we're not going to go on some kind of heavy debt-fueled acquisition spree. We will be prudent in how we invest in the future. And the search continues. So in the second half, obviously, we're now at the end of November. October and November are critical months, particularly this year, because as Giles mentioned, the bottlenecking that happened because of delayed decisions on tariffs in the United States has meant that October and November have been incredibly busy. We also had the a changed phasing in the UK. You may have seen that sales in the first half in the UK were actually down 4%. Some of that is because our deliveries to particularly the grocery customers happened more in October this year than they did in September, as they focused on their food receipts during the month of October in preparation for Brexit that never was. We are rolling out our new ERP IT platform in the United States. We will complete that by the end of the next financial year. We put that on hold during our peak season. No regrets in doing that. We think it's a difficult thing to do whilst doing the day job. As far as the other aspects of the business in terms of sourcing non-China product, interestingly enough, in South America, that's been a big win for us. And the rollout of our CapEx programs in both Europe and the UK, we're very focused on that. We're busy bunnies, I can assure you. And we will be very focused on converting, as ever, that profit into cash for the rest of the year. So in summary, lots of organic growth opportunities, and let's try and over-deliver on those, let's say. We are looking at acquisition opportunities. We do see that the net margin, which last year was 7.3% at year end, we do see an ongoing journey. And I think that our vision was that we can go through the 8% barrier in the relative short term, and we feel on track to do that. Yes, it's been challenging, but You know, we feel that we are as well placed or better placed than a lot of the players in our marketplace to embrace those challenges and combat them. So far, so good. And I look forward to any questions that you have.
In terms of your gross profit percent, it obviously dipped in the second half of last year because of the acquisition in the States and so on. And you're coming out now around about just over 20%. Going forward, what sort of level do you think with increased investment efficiency you'd be able to achieve? Is it the sort of up to 25 or is it sort of 23? What sort of, and is that a 2 to 3 year period?
I would say that the gross margin increase will kind of reflect the net margin increase, probably another 2%.
Yeah, and I think it's it will depend how we grow specific product categories as well. But yeah, I mean, we would hope to move that forward, definitely, yeah.
And in terms of the manufacturing consolidation in the US, was that consolidated around an impact facility or a facility
yes.
you had? An impact facility.
Yeah.
That's very good news. I think for them, that would be very good news.
Yes. It was. And, you know, people asked about how have the teams responded. Well, you know, we made some, we think, rational decisions and objective decisions. We felt that their facilities were better geared for new investment than ours were. So we exited our facilities. And I believe we handled that well. But yeah, it's been a positive thing to have invested in their business.
If you look throughout the presentation, you see that in most of the pages, Australia is lagging behind. I counted the stars for future, it's only 23. If you look at the debt, it's got higher margin of debt. If you look at the performance, it's been always a problem in Australia. What is the strategic impact and value of Australian business to you, to the group?
Well, I beg to differ, if I may, because Australia has not always been a problem. I would say it's been a bit of a roller coaster. So we like the good news when it's good news and the way down isn't so hot. But I take your point. The Australian business is relatively low maintenance. I think it's 9% operating margin. What I would say is we do see opportunities for it to grow. I think there's greater opportunity to grow it organically. We would also consider acquisitions in that region as well. From a sort of a working capital drain.
I mean, it's not really draining working capital. It's,
yeah.
There is a base working capital amount there. In fact, we're seeing inventories coming down in Australia, so they're working hard on that. To your point, I mean, you're right to point it out, absolutely. But the other way of thinking about it, this is a business that's probably impacting our EPS by about 3 or 4%. Mm. It's a very, very small part of the group, and to be honest, we're not having to spend hours and hours each week worried about it because it's got its own management team, it's managing, and it is. To Paul's point, still delivering a good profit and a good operating profit margin. We'd like it to do more, obviously.
If you look at page 13, you've got great EBITDA growth, great operating cash conversion, great ROC, annual growth, organic growth is quite low. And I understand the reasons why it is low and why it probably will stay that level. Does it mean that we all expect to have a big bang acquisition? That's the only solution.
Well, as I say, acquisitions are very much part of the strategy, as they have been for a number of years. I would say that additional organic growth opportunities are there. I think that I understand the reason for your question, but a large individual acquisition would be attractive, but it's not the only kind of acquisition that's on the radar. There's a whole portfolio and different scales. And the large ones tend to be in the United States for obvious reasons. But we're very happy and are looking at acquisition opportunities in every region. What I would say from our experience of Impact, which was a big acquisition, is that actually the challenges are pretty similar. So if the evaluation of synergies stacks up, given the choice, I would say if we can find a compelling larger acquisition, that would be definitely, I would say, a preference. But we shouldn't dismiss smaller ones, and we don't.
Could I just ask, what would be your expectations on the cost base going forward, leaving out of it the amortization on the acquisitions, the real sort of cash costs on OPEX? How should somebody trying to model the business?
Yeah, SG&A, for example.
SG&A and...
Yeah.
So I would say we're pretty good in terms of managing our SG&A. We're not seeing any significant inflation or additional requirement for SG&A to take the business forward. I think it's similar to what we've seen in previous years. We've actually seen as revenues are going up, we're seeing our SG&A as a percentage of revenues declining. I'd probably be maintaining that profile and that trend.
So sort of low single digits.
Increases, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
So CapEx for the next full year, you've given guidance of 11 to 13 million, which I think is quite a lot more than historically. Do we expect that going forward?
No. Our guidance of 11 to 13, so let's call it 12, is very much reflective of the fact that we are putting a very big investment into the US in relation to the printing press. We have another big project in Europe, which is a couple of million euros in relation to automating the packaging processes within the gift wrap manufacturing in facilities that we have. And then we're also spending about £1 million on an additional bag line within the UK to support our not for resale initiative. So those in themselves are chunky numbers that help get to that 12 million. So in some ways, yes, that is an unusually high number. Going forward, we would expect that number to drop back. We're looking at about 8. The majority of that would, not the majority, about half of that would be just ongoing maintenance capex, or the ongoing capex within the business, and then the balance would be new initiatives and new opportunities that might come along. Saying that, you know, if some big opportunity for organic growth came along that involved investment, we wouldn't be shy of doing that. If we could see the payback, and we typically look at 3 to 4 year payback for us to be able to sign off on capex.
What's your amortization period?
Well, it depends what the capex is.
Yeah, okay.
So, big printing press would be, you know, 10 years or so. Clearly, if it's IT software or IT equipment, it's going to be a shorter period and so on.
Yeah.
Obviously, you talked at the start about how the UK is further down the road in terms of internet retailing than, say, the US. And how do you see that working in the US going forward? Do you see them catching up with us? And how do you see the sort of the change in how people will be shopping? And particularly one of the things I'm looking at is sort of the small things like creative play and things, which are already discretionary purchases.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see how people sell those these days, really, because, you know, it's not the sort of thing you're going to go on Amazon really and buy, probably, not in volume. So it's, you know, I was looking through your big retailers and I was asking, who is going to be selling those in volume?
Sure. I think there are definitely certain categories which are more suited for online sale than others. I completely agree with you there. Brick and mortar retailing isn't dead. Some is, but we've definitely found the mass and discount area has got its place in the world, as has what I would call niche retailing. So, and there are some new fresh businesses which are replacing those which are naturally dying. I think our business, if we take a look of 3 or 5 years, this year will be around 4 or 5%, I think, of sales will be attributed to online activity. I think that for us, I think it will definitely double over the next few years. But I think that we've got to still look at the nature and the experiential shopping aspect of some of our categories, greetings and celebration in particular. But you mentioned creative play. I agree with you. That's one area where I think online demand is more suitable. It's higher price point generally. Licensed products that we have sell well online. You know, someone will research, will search Star Wars, and up comes our product. So, you know, I take your point. I think the dynamics are different in the United States to the UK, and we are. I think the proportion of non-food sold online in the UK, I think, is greater than it is in the United States. It's cultural. It's geography as well.
I think also the consumer in the UK is being squeezed much more than in the US, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
And that, I mean, you are a luxury product. You know, you're surprisingly doing really well.
Well, we're a discretionary product, but at the end of the day, our average retail price point is between £1 and £2. Yeah. So, you know, last year we sold about 800 million products. Our average selling price was in the mid 50 pence, and the average retail price is between £1 and £2. So what people may alter the gift that they buy, but they're going to wrap it. And, you know, we're doing very well with the dollar stores, the pound stores, the mass discounters. So actually, you know, we're pretty resilient, frankly.
You've seen that in the past, obviously.
Yeah, certainly. I would actually say some of our major customers, the Lidls and the Aldis and the B&Ms and the dollar stores, do well in tough times, as they are in the UK now. Absolutely. Yeah. Work with the winners.
You mentioned the deluge of opportunities in M&A arriving at your desk. Is that a reflection of underlying difficult trading conditions that certain types of businesses are experiencing?
I think that's a very astute comment. You know, the ones that come our way are generally, they reached a peak or they're having a tough time. As I say, the ones that are quite interesting from our point of view is where we pick up the phone.
Yeah.
Or our customers, frankly, have said to us, guys, it would be great if you can get together with this company. And there's an agenda there, obviously. Yeah. But it's not a coincidence. I think two things in the last couple of years, a lot of people in our related category industries had a pretty tough time. And I think that our profile changed. I didn't really have that on my radar, frankly, but our profile changed in the last few years, and particularly since we acquired Impact, because people see that we have the appetite, and hopefully we can demonstrate a track record of integrating pretty well, and that we, frankly, are fortunate to have our shareholder support where that's required as well. And none of those things are a given. And, you know, we don't take them for granted. You've got to keep deserving that stuff. So, yeah, but there are more companies. Clearly, what you don't want to do is invest in a business which is not just slowing down, but is probably dead. And we've got organic alternatives to that.
So when one of these businesses eventually piques your interest, is the investment thesis on our part going to be predicated on not necessarily growing their revenue line in what is probably a tough market, but more for us to take out unnecessary costs and accrete value in that way?
Well, that's interesting. When we did the Impact acquisition last year, what we presented was a business that we said our modelling assumption is that this business continues to have a flat top line, but we see real benefits at the bottom line through the synergies and some of the potential cross-selling into our business, plus also purchasing synergies. So there was all lots of cost or operational efficiencies that we were putting that were driving that. Now, as it is, we've actually seen revenue upside from that. So it's you know, what we model is often a cautious and careful, because we don't want to overpromise and underdeliver and all that sort of stuff. We like to be cautious in that.
This is a bit of a sweeping statement, but we have found that quite a lot of the businesses which are US based only think about America. And, you know, fortunately, 40% of our business is not just in one location. So it does take time to adapt product for different markets. But we think that's a pretty interesting opportunity. We got the customers, they're buying those product categories, but now we are a player, potentially. So that's quite interesting. But we do like tangible cost synergies, absolutely. And if there are commercial ones over and above that, let that be icing on the cake.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's interesting, just to pick up on the link back to the Australia question, bringing decor, seasonal decor, into the group through a US acquisition.
Yeah.
The CEO of our Australian business immediately jumped on that and said, great, I've now got a new sales opportunity.
Yeah. But it takes 2 years to come through. Yeah. Thank you, everyone. Appreciate the questions. Thanks for your time.
Thanks a lot.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.